Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning. Today is the beginning of the second week in Copenhagen of the International Climate Change Summit. And what they're discovering is that, surprise, surprise, when you bring 192 countries together to try and reach some kind of agreement, they all have different priorities, and it's stalling the agreement talks. We're joined now again by Tom Burke. He's the founding director of E3G, and he's an environmental policy advisor. And also Bjorn Lomborg joins us, director of the Copenhagen Consensus Center. That's a think tank. He's also author of the book The Skeptical Environmentalist. He joins us from Copenhagen. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Tom, let's talk a little bit about this deal that they're talking about for Friday. When we went into the Copenhagen Climate Summit, everyone was saying that we were probably not going to reach any kind of deal, and we probably wouldn't see anything actually in paper until next year. So what is the deal that we're talking about for Friday?
Well, I think people have been talking about it happening in two parts, really. A political bargain that will be made in Copenhagen and finished this week, which will set the frame for a treaty that people need to do next year. And hopefully, I think a lot of people are arguing now, has to be done by about June next year.
So this is the political piece of what is essentially an update to the Kyoto Protocol?
No, it's much more than an update to the Kyoto Protocol. It really is a sort of broader treaty that will involve more people and a wider range of issues to be dealt with. So there's an argument about whether to continue with the Kyoto Protocol or not, but what's really under discussion is a much bigger bargain involving, for instance, forests, a lot of other things that weren't dealt with in the Kyoto Protocol.
Bjorn, you're well known for acknowledging that global warming exists, but saying it's perhaps not the top priority in the world, correct?
That's pretty much correct, yes.
So do you think we need to make this agreement, the one that Tom is talking about?
Well, I think, first of all, Tom is absolutely right in his analysis that this is what most people expect will come out. The problem that I have with this deal is essentially it's following the same failed strategy of the last 18 years. It's essentially a lot of promises which we've done for 18 years. We promised a lot of cuts in Rio in 1992, and we didn't do them. Then we promised even grander cuts in Kyoto in 1997, and we still didn't do them. And so coming together in Copenhagen and simply making even grander promises are not actually going to do anything for climate. It's just simply spinning the wheels in the road to nowhere.
All right,
so
Bjorn,
I would suggest we should do something that's smarter.
All right, well, let's talk about that for just a moment. I mean, is that a failure of the promises and the rhetoric of the nations themselves, or is it a recognition that we actually don't have the mechanisms to enforce any promise, grandiose or otherwise?
It's not been the failure Bjorn says it's been. There have been significant reductions around the world from what would have otherwise happened, and they've happened precisely because there was an international agreement in place. So it's a bit cavalier to dismiss all of that out of hand and all the things that lots of people and lots of countries have done to reduce emissions.
That's Tom Burke of of E3G. Bjorn?
Yes, and let's just be honest. I mean, here I do disagree with Tom, and unfortunately for Tom, the data is on my side. Fundamentally, if you look at what's actually come out of the Kyoto Protocol, we promised to cut emissions, which would have been the equivalent of cutting 11% of global emissions by 2010. Instead, we'll probably end up cutting about half a percentage point. So we did about 1/20. So I would submit that we've done virtually nothing. And John, to answer your question, fundamentally the reason is that we do not have the technologies to make this cheaply. We can do it very, very expensively, but of course very few nations are going to do that. A few well-meaning Westerners might do it, but we're not going to get most of the world on board for doing a dramatic carbon cut. That's why we should be investing a lot more in research and development into green energy technology, because before it's cheap, we won't get most people to do it.
Okay, Bjorn Lomborg is, of course, the author of The Skeptical Environmentalist, which is what we're hearing from him right now. Tom Burke, do you have a response to him talking about all of our solutions being too expensive?
Picking up the data he likes and saying it shows things, and there's lots of other data that shows different things. the most important piece about saying it would cost too much, the McKinsey's have done an enormous amount of work showing that you get about half of what you need to get at no cost at all, simply by doing the things we haven't been doing to improve energy efficiency. So it would not only be good for the environment, it would also be good for the economy. And actually, because those things that you do are very widely dispersed around the nation, they would create an enormous amount of jobs in the way. Now, that's McKinsey speaking. I'm inclined to think they probably know what they're talking about on this subject.
Tom, are the discussions getting stalled over who to blame? I mean, as you were talking earlier about the divide between first and third world countries, are the third world countries partially trying to say that the first world was responsible for global warming and therefore is responsible for the bulk of the cleanup?
I don't think it's that issue that's stalling the things. I think the issues are really substantive issues that are stalling it. How much money is going to be on the table? What level of reductions are going to be on the table? But certainly there is, people are beginning to maneuver for a blame game. And what's happening from the African countries, and particularly in the small island states, is they're saying, look, what's at stake here is survival. This isn't, for us, a sort of issue about does it cost a little bit more or do we lose a few jobs. For them, it's a real question about whether they can maintain prosperity and security and the stability of the state at all. So they are not so much in a blame game as trying to say, listen, pay attention to us.
So Bjorn Lomborg of the Copenhagen Consensus Center, you heard what Tom just said. Although you feel as this is, perhaps is not the best thing that the world could be working on right now, he says that for the third world countries and developing countries, it's crucial.
Yes, and that is definitely what a lot of developing countries are saying. Clearly, they are seeing this as a gigantic honeypot that they can actually get hundreds of billions of dollars. The negotiator for the African countries actually suggests that we should be paying $2,500 billion a year to the developing world. Of course, that's not going to happen. And the underlying problem, of course, is this really where they need the most money, or is that indeed to deal with the many other problems like malaria, malnutrition, lack of clean drinking water, all the other issues? But let me just point back to say that Tom is also telling us that McKinsey is saying that we could do all of this for cheap or maybe even for free, half of it for free. But, of course, the real point that most economists would make and not a consultancy agency is to say, well, that's why it hasn't happened, because it actually is expensive. And we know most countries realize this is going to be phenomenally expensive. It's not going to be the end of the economy, of course not, but it is a huge outlay.
Okay,
that's why we're not seeing this happening.
That's Bjorn Lomborg. He's director of the think tank, the Copenhagen Consensus Center. For the last thing, Tom, I want you to listen to this cut again from Bishop Desmond Tutu.
For those who think that the rich are going to escape.
He seems bemused by that idea. What does Bishop Desmond Tutu know that the rest of us do not?
I think he's completely misunderstood it. The problem is we won't escape. You know, our economies in a globalized world don't succeed if other economies fail. And if the kind of things that are going to happen with climate change in China, in India, in South America take place, then that will really kick back on us. So I don't unfortunately agree with Desmond Tutu on that.
Okay.
When it comes to knowing what's good for you, I'm inclined to believe that the leaders of the African countries know a bit better than Bjorn Lomborg what's in the interest of their people. And they're all in Copenhagen right now saying we want some action on this, and this is what matters to us.
Okay, Tom Burke is the founding director of E3G. And it-